prepare yourself for the terror. The prison of madness, where few enter and none return.
Welcome to Unsung Horrors. With Lance. And Erica.
Leave all your sanity behind. It can't help you now.
Welcome to another episode of Unsung Horrors, the podcast where we discuss underseen horror movies, specifically those with fewer than 1,000 views on Letterboxd. I'm Erica.
I'm Lance.
And it is April.
Showers of blood.
And what that means is the movies that we are going to be covering this month will have blood in the title.
Yeah, there's a lot to choose from.
There's a lot. Makes it pretty easy.
But it's still kind of like, I don't know, the rules that are set make me even more nervous to pick from like what's out there.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Next year when you start looking, start with Sangue. So you can start, find some foreign films instead.
There you go.
Yeah. I found one Cake of Blood and then I watched it and I was like, yeah.
Yeah,
I watched it. But it was Sangue de Pastel and I was like, ooh, neat.
Yeah. I like the idea of different language. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Smart.
So what's funny, though, about this film is that the original title of it doesn't have Sangue in it, but it is called Bloody Sect, mm-hmm. a.k.a. Secta Sinistra from 1982. This has a Vinegar Syndrome release, and as of this recording, has 528 views on Letterboxd.
And streaming on Arrow streaming services. If
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's right. I brought that up last
You did
time.
Bring that up, yeah.
Damn it. Oh, my brain. Love how it doesn't work sometimes. All right, so quick rundown of Bloody Sect. After escaping from the attic, Elizabeth finds Frederick in bed with Helen and decides to gouge out his eyes with a fire poker. Elizabeth ends up in jail, and Frederick is permanently blinded. He and his wife, Helen, want to have a baby, but Frederick is unable to, so they go to a clinic for artificial insemination. At the clinic, a member of a satanic cult gleefully watches as she is inseminated with the sperm of Satan. We later find out that two other women received sperm from the same donor, one of whom got rid of the fetus after becoming extremely ill, and for that was subsequently killed by the Satanists, and the other was killed by her own husband because she was in such bad condition. Early in her pregnancy, Helen is experiencing a lot of pain and illness. So the Satanists set her up with a female caregiver, Margaret, to watch over her. As Helen nears the birth of her child, Elizabeth breaks out of jail and goes back to the house, and all hell breaks loose, figuratively and literally.
Yeah. There's a lot of, there's just a lot of questions that are raised.
There's quite a few. I have some questions that, and I don't normally want to try to apply too much like, well, how about this and why and how this to these types of movies? But I do have one burning question about this.
And, I do too. I wonder if it's the same. We're on the same page quite a bit.
Okay. We'll see.
Yeah.
When we get to that part. This is directed by Ignacio Aquino. He has a long career dating back to the 1930s. He's got 80 plus film credits, but this is his only horror film. I did find a few of his other films floating around, but none that had subtitles. There were a few I found on torrents, but they were too many gigs to make it worth it for me to download, so I didn't. So I actually didn't check out any of the other films that he directed. A lot of them are Westerns, dramas. There's a few softcore films in there, too, which I would have watched.
Yeah, I looked. I tried to watch some of his Westerns, but none of them had subtitles.
Yeah.
I was kind of bummed about it because they looked good.
Yeah, I was interested in a few of them, but every time I found them somewhere, I was like, no subs. I'm like, this is great.
We need to learn Spanish.
I'm, you know, see.
It's never too late.
See. Screenwriters. The original story and original script was by Juan Bosch. And then Aquino and his wife actually got the rights to the script. And the end product, Bosch was not necessarily a fan of after Aquino and his wife made some changes to it. Cinematography is by Juan Gelpi, and we've mentioned him before because he was the same cinematographer for Corruption of Chris Miller, which we covered earlier on in the podcast.
yeah, Giallo January pick.
Hell yeah. That also has a Vinegar Syndrome release. And if you haven't seen it yet, you should definitely pick that up. It's still streaming on Tubi as well. He also did the cinematography for Crypt of the Living Dead from 1972. And I know you watched this earlier, like maybe, I think just like a few months ago, actually.
I feel like I watched this a couple of years ago.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah, 2020.
Oh, yeah. Well, time is a flat circle. So I have no idea what's happening.
I do remember it, though.
Yeah. It's fun. I liked it.
I remember the ending very well. The scream.
Yes. Yeah. The alternate title for it is like Helen, Queen of the Vampires or something like that.
Young Hannah, Queen of the Vampires.
Hannah, not Helen. Queen of the Vampires. Cool. And then one other film that he did quite a few others, but one other one that I wanted to mention that he did the cinematography for is a film called A Dog Named Vengeance, or El Perro. This came up recently, and I can't remember which podcast it came up on, but it stars Jason Miller from The Exorcist, and he is a political prisoner, and he escapes, and a prison guard and the dog chase after him. Miller kills the guard, and so the dog is like on a mission to like track him down, and it's like,
and that's the whole movie?
That's the majority of the movie. Like, it's not enough of the movie. When the dog is there, the movie is great. But like, the audio dub that of the version that I watched was really bad. And so there was this whole sort of like rebel group trying to, with a plan that was really sort of convoluted and hard to follow. And so whenever that was focused on that, a lot of things were really unclear. If it was just this dog chasing after Jason Miller, amazing. And you can see Jason Miller's penis too. He gets butt naked in this.
So. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So Juan Antonio Bardem is in it.
Yes.
He's an actor in it. He directed Corruption of Christmas.
Yes. I was going to, I was circling back to that, but okay, yeah,
sorry.
No, you're fine. But yeah, that movie was good. I built it up a lot in my head. Cause I was like, fuck yeah. Dog chasing after Jason Miller for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Like,
that sounds badass.
I liked it, but could have been better. Score is by Enrique Escobar. I wrote three words down next to score. I wrote discordant organ banging.
Yeah. it sounds like every once in a while, a child is just going nuts on a keyboard. Because the whole thing, from what I could gather, is just on a keyboard. There's no other instruments. It's him like layering, and it is chaotic.
Yes.
Especially those opening credits. And I mean, I'm just going to point out right now, but some of the musical cues feels like I envisioned him just watching the movie with like, you know, staring up with the keyboard in front of him.
Yeah.
And something happens and he quickly hits the keys. So it's like, there's a 2 second like missed opportunity. There's a lot of that going on. But I thought it was just maddening. It was just too much.
That's hilarious. So as far as like production information goes, there is a commentary track on the Vinegar Syndrome release from Kat Ellinger. And so Kat Ellinger even couldn't find very much information about it because there just simply wasn't any distribution or advertising. So there's not really any anecdotes or background information about the film. So a lot of her commentary focused on Spanish cinema during this time period and a little bit on like the connectivity between a lot of the people who were working on these films. So like Bardem and the cinematographer and some of the actors, but there isn't really too much to say about a lot of the actors because a lot of them were either in some of Aquino's other films, but they're not really in anything that I recognize or that I think listeners would recognize if I mentioned them by name. Yeah, looking through everyone's filmography, I was like, I don't see a single thing that I've even heard of before. I saw a few that I was interested in watching, but again, couldn't find subs. But yeah, it's kind of this thing where like, you know, Aquino and sort of a lot of the people, save for the cinematographer, are in this little bubble that has yet to really get tapped and a lot of people to discover yet. And I think like this release by Vinegar Syndrome is kind of a step toward that.
Right.
Kind of like what we were talking about with Abraham in our Black Pit episode, where not a lot of these Mexican Gothic films have been coming out, but he hinted that a lot more to come. And I know you just picked up two. You got two of them.
Yeah, La Llorona and the Phantom of the Monastery.
Yeah. So I've got that coming too. And he hinted at a few others that are probably coming out. So I think that wave for that is coming. And right. So I think, you know, there are plenty of other really good Spanish horror movies. I think a lot of people forget that Pieces is Spanish. They think it's Italian.
Right. I'd love to see Belle from Hell. Did Kat bring that up actually at all in her commentary?
She didn't, no.
Okay. But that one is a movie I feel like I might have paired it up like more than once with a double feature pick.
Maybe. I think you've paired it up officially once, but you've brought it up at least two or three times in that segment. But yeah, that movie is so good. And
it is.
There's so many other good Spanish flicks that have gotten attention from labels like Vinegar Syndrome and Mondo Macabro. Mm-hmm. So I think that wave is coming soon. I don't think we're going to get any, I'm not sure if we'll get any more from Aquino because most of his other filmography doesn't,
right.
I don't know, maybe the Westerns, but we'll see.
Yeah. I just want a dog called Vengeance.
I'm sure that'll get, oh, you know who did mention, it came up on an episode of Pure Cinema and Quentin Tarantino brought it up.
Oh, is
so
that right?
So if he brought it up, then
people
someone.
People are scrambling, yeah.
Yeah, someone's going to fucking figure out a way to like get that on Blu-ray now. So yeah, that's who brought it up. So you probably will be able to get a Blu-ray of that movie if there is elements to do so.
Right.
So even though the actors don't really have any other films to mention, I still do want to bring up who they are. So first up, we have Carlos Martos. He plays Frederick Payne, the husband. Then Emma Kerr. She plays Helen Payne, his wife. Diana Conca plays Elizabeth. She is the... Yeah, hell yeah. I don't know. It's going to be between her and Margaret for who's my favorite, but we'll see.
Margaret's entrance, it's like superstar here. Right? So good.
So Diana Conca as Elizabeth, she is the crazy lady in the attic. And also, I'm 95% sure Frederick's ex-lover because there's a throwaway. Okay, at some point, like at first I thought she was the wife and then he locked her in the attic and then Helen was the lover. And but
I mean, I kind of got that, too. Like, I thought they were exes. Like, I don't know how, I don't know if they were married.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like. It's weird how she was just
still in the house.
They're waiting to like send her off to the asylum or someone to pick her up and take her away.
Yeah.
Locked up.
I would love to get like a prequel to this movie.
Absolutely. That's a great call.
All right. So next we have Concha Valero. She plays Sister Margaret and she is the Satanist midwife or housemaid or house helper.
She's the satanic Ursa from Superman 2. I don't know.
And I saw your review on about the movie. This next guy, Henry Ragud, he's credited as Satanista Jefe, or basically the boss of the Satanists. And your review mentioned that he looks like a particular actor.
Do you not agree?
He looks I agree 100%.
He looks like Chris Sarandon.
100%.
Just like, I mean, when I first saw this, you know, when I bought it years ago, I think, for Vinegar Syndrome and just mm-hmm. haven't watched it. As soon as I saw this on their site, I'm like, oh shit, Chris Sarandon is in the Spanish movie? No. I mean, every time I saw him, I still thought he looked, I mean, he's a little more, you know, prominent jawline and stuff, this actor here.
Yeah.
But in that poster, it's uncanny.
Oh, it looks like him completely.
Yes.
Now, before you go, listeners, looking up what we're talking about, just be warned that within that same poster, there is a spoiler for the end of the film. So I know I pointed it out last time, and as always, we do spoil films when we talk about them. So if you haven't already, buy it from Vinegar Syndrome, watch it on the Arrow Player, or if you don't give a fuck, then listen on, because we're going to get more into this film right after this promo from our network.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal, providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.
I want to get this out of the way first, and I want to see like if your big question is the same as my big question. So,
okay.
their plan, the Satanist plan, is that we've got three inseminated women,
at least, right?
At least,
yeah.
So, I'm wondering a few things, like if it was just these three women. Was the original plan to have some sort of unholy trinity? Like, are they like, we want all of these women to carry the term? Or were they like, let's just roll the dice and at least one of them, it should happen. That's not my big question.
Okay.
All of these women have been inseminated with Satan's sperm.
Yeah.
Okay. I think you're smiling. So I think you have the same question.
I think you're going. Yeah. We're headed to the same.
How did they get Satan's spunk?
Where did the demon seed come from? That's my note right there. Is there like some sort of sperm clinic in hell, like milking the devil?
I don't know. I have sub questions to this. If Satan is jerking it into a cup, what is he reading or watching for enticement? If you're the devil, like what could you possibly watch that's getting you off?
I mean, probably the same movies you watch, which are children being murdered over and over again.
That's true. That's
no, that's a good question. What would the devil watch to get him horny? And
yeah, if you guys know, you can please comment and let us know. Because
that's a good.
I mean, Lance is probably right. It's probably just child murder.
I mean, basically, I do a podcast with Satan. I mean, no, because I do really like this angle because it's completely different than you know all the other like. The child of the Antichrist.
Right. Yeah.
Like this is actually they have the sperm and they're artificially inseminating women who are going to clinics.
Yeah. I like the angle of it, but, and I don't want to nitpick on the logic of a film like this, but I think there is a missed opportunity here. And that's to literally have a shot of Satan jerking off. Like, I don't necessarily need to know where the goo came from, but I do think that like, if there was a movie where you could have that, it could be this movie.
I agree.
Where there's like just the nightmare, you know, fucking dream sequence thing going on. And like Satan's over there just like, you know, and it's just like.
Yeah. Or like, I'm sure it's been done in a movie too, where the child, cause you know, Helen who has the baby in her, she goes through a lot of pains. Mm-hmm. And I guess all these women did, cause that's why one of them was killed and one of them had an abortion. Like a point of view with the baby, the demon baby inside kind of clawing at the.
Yeah, that would have been good too. Like some busted like Luigi Cozzi movie or something like
that. Oh, yeah.
Luigi Cozzi, not I fucked that up completely.
Yeah. Yeah. Cozzi. Yeah. Exactly like that from like Black Cat with that fucking, I don't know. It's like a baby in a pickled, I don't know, like it's
pickled baby.
Pickled, exactly. Like pieces are falling off of him floating around.
Like I do like this angle with the insemination. It's interesting that a movie, again, like this, doesn't have a satanic rape scene because this is very much aped off of Rosemary's Baby.
For sure.
So you would think it would have something like that and it doesn't. Instead, it's this much more like clinical procedure. That's happening.
It is. Yeah. And I'm wondering, because this has all the main necessary ingredients for a soap opera. Mm-hmm. I mean, it plays out like a telenovela.
Yeah.
And maybe that supernatural element of a jerking off Satan or, you know, the way it is like very clinical and procedural, like artificial insemination and this abortion talk, that's very soap opera-y.
Yeah.
Which kind of fits into so many more of the elements that are in this movie, which I love.
Yeah, it's like other telenovela sort of elements, most of them involving when Elizabeth is on screen, I think.
Oh, yeah. She's made for soap operas.
She is. Her face is so dramatic. Like, there's these overly dramatic musical cues. There's cat fights. There's these, like, quick zoom shots and on faces and, like,
expressions. The reactions, like, eyes widening, then narrowing, and then widening again.
Exactly. I love it.
Nostrils flaring.
Yeah,
like you said, the cat fights, too, but even like some of the main plot points, like a man is blind and he's going through like trying to deal with his blindness or his disease. There's always like some sort of sick character. There's a crazy mm-hmm. ex-wife that's causing havoc on families.
Yeah.
There's just a lot going on. An evil doctor at a clinic. I mean, there's I just love it. I love all the soap opera elements that are going. And a lot of weird overlong kissing.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a little more, you know, there's nudity and it's way more sexual than a lot of televised soap operas, but it doesn't, it feels like it's like staged, you know, the kissing and stuff. It's,
oh, for sure. Yeah. Like they're even not even just like kissing, but like mouth close-ups, because when the doctor gets killed in the parking lot and like the, he's on the ground, blood's coming out of his mouth. That shot holds for so long.
Every single kill scene, I think like Aquino had a huge infatuation with blood coming out of people's mouths, because mm-hmm. every single death scene, you just focus in for, I mean, like you said, it's a good like 30 seconds plus of just these people spitting out the beautiful red paint, bright red paint.
Blood, oh yeah.
Which I love.
Yeah. The abortion doctor, the woman, when she spits her blood, like right on the camera.
Yeah.
Love it.
That's a supernatural kill. That's where it gets. That's super, yeah. That's really weird.
It gets, oh my God. There's so much stuff.
There is. I mean,
there's supernatural elements. There's satanic elements. There's so much. I did want to get back to kind of the soap opera elements, because you were mentioning like the characters, and a lot of times, you know, you have some sort of like sexy, strong male character in this. Mm-hmm. You don't have that at all in right. here, because Frederick, he starts off that way. He's introduced as an ex-mercenary.
He's like a Indiana Jones, like his backstory.
Yeah.
What's that? That's one of my questions too. And again, I shouldn't focus on like, you know, but what's the purpose of that background?
There isn't one, because yeah, he's given this great backstory. He's had this, he's traveled all over the place. He's been a prisoner of war. He was an ex-mercenary.
He was imprisoned in Uganda,
yeah.
Killed everyone to escape with a sword. He pointed out, was a bodyguard to an Arabian prince.
Yeah.
To me, I feel like it's set up, maybe it's setting him up because he is this powerful male. And then this crazy woman comes and just takes all of that away. His eyesight, his ability to, you know, impregnate a woman, he becomes impotent. I mean,
yeah,
she just wipes him out in a matter of seconds with that little gauge of,
Yeah, he definitely has all of his masculinity taken away from him. I don't know if his infertility is, because they said it was something congenital or something like that.
So oh, they did, yeah.
I'm not, but I mean, even then, that's just like adding to like, oh, you can't see, you can't fuck. Well, you can fuck, but you can't make babies. He should be happy, but whatever. But
I don't have to look at children. I don't have to have them. This is great.
But yeah, he's pretty, like, he's set up really great. And then you realize, like, for most of the movie, you're like, he's just puttering around and like yelling and like, where are you? What's happening? And then at the end, yeah, he kills Margaret with a sword. Yeah. And I was like, was that whole setup just for that?
I love that scene, because he's, you know, he plays blind. He gets fake eyes. And, mm-hmm. You know, but how he plays blind is what so many actors do, is they look up.
They look up, yeah.
So he's stabbing her in the back, just looking straight up. And I'm just like focusing in on him and not the actual, you know, murder taking place. And it's just very, very funny to watch.
Yeah.
But yeah, there is no strong male. I mean, and with any soap opera, any long running seasons, you know, it's these ongoing seasons with soap operas. You fall in love with, you know, a single character or multiple characters.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've brought up our two favorite characters already. Yeah. Elizabeth is that character for me. As soon as she's introduced,
yeah,
she is wearing this witch mask and she just starts fucking with
Anna.
Anna.
Yeah.
Yeah. And throwing like mattresses on her and just hulking out and freaking out and laughing like a maniac.
Yeah.
Because she's, you know, previously mentioned is insane and somebody needs to take her away. But she is just so compelling to watch. Her facial expressions. She's dressed like, I don't know, like Madonna's Like a Virgin era. Like she's,
yeah.
She plays dress up throughout the whole like kind of movie. She reminded me of the music box maniac from Black Pit of Dr. M.
Yeah.
She's just kind of like hopping around and stealing the show. I mean,
she really is. And she's gone for a big chunk of the middle of the film, because after she stabs out Frederick's eyes, she gets taken away to jail. So she's gone for a good chunk, but you don't actually feel her gone for that long, because this movie moves. There is not a single scene in here that you pick up your phone and look at like, what time is it? Or like, hit pause how much longer in this film. It moves.
It does. Like the first, like as soon as it started, the first like 10 minutes, 15 minutes, it just races. I mean, it's kind of, I don't know, from the first shot, it's very, and the restoration is beautiful.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Like it immediately captivates you. But yeah, things just move along in a crazy hurry, even though they're kind of slowly set up, you know, with that whole talk of, you know, Helen showing up and Frederick being a mercenary and all that backstory. Yeah, it's just bookended by the beginning, I think, is just so well done. And then, of course, like the last 15 minutes is just too much to take. I mean, the last like 10 minutes of, you know, we haven't talked to him about it yet, but that young kid Peter's running around. Everybody's kind of just running around frantically. It reminds me of that, like a scene in Scooby-Doo where you're looking down a hallway and all the characters are chasing in and out, you know, of different rooms chasing each other. Yeah. Just like, you know, it's so fast. And
yeah, it's like Elizabeth is running up the stairs back up there because Margaret's chasing her. She's like, I'll get you soon. And then Peter shows up and she's like, gotta get that boy. And then the doctor's wife shows up and she's like, oh, wait, gotta kill her and like get her into the garage. And they kill a lot of people in this. And I think that's another reason why it feels like it's paced so well, is because it's not like, okay, within like 10 or 15 minutes, all these people get killed. It's spread out so well throughout the film. And then there's so many. And again, not, you know, I'm probably make a lot of comparisons to Rosemary's Baby. Rosemary's Baby only kills two people. Is it Hutch, her old friend, and the younger girl who lived in the apartment before them, Terry.
Yeah.
And this has a fucking body count. So the Satanists kill the female abortion doctor who terminated the pregnancy of the first woman who was inseminated. And that's this whole supernatural, like wind comes in, furniture is moving poltergeist style. And it basically, she gets like the room just falls apart on her. And that's kind of what kills her.
She gets like smashed with the gurney, like over and over again. Yeah. And it's just, I liked it because they look like they're dressed like priests.
Yeah.
So to me, it's like these right wing fanatical priests coming into an abortion clinic and just like, okay, this is kind of real.
Yeah, feels like it. My favorite kills, though, are the woman who got the abortion from that doctor and her husband.
Yes.
In the elevator.
Yeah, that lift. With the straight razor.
With straight razor, like the mirror breaks and like the glass pieces come in her and like slash her neck and kill her. It's very giallo-esque.
It is. Yeah, and then you throw in that bright red blood. It just, I kept feeling that Italian influence there.
Yeah. And then I think the Satanists didn't actually kill this couple, but the second couple who was impregnated, we already mentioned supernatural elements. We already mentioned satanic elements. Now we're going to get into zombie elements because the second couple, the Satanists are trying to track down all the women who've been inseminated. They find the first one, they kill her because she got an abortion. The second couple, they show up and the wife is already dead. She's in a coffin. The husband's mourning her. And then while the husband is talking to El Jefe, the coffin opens and the dead wife starts rising out of it like a fucking zombie.
Yeah. That whole thing felt like I was watching like a, I don't know, like a Herschel Gordon Lewis, like that whole scene, because it, you know, the makeup is, again, the restoration is beautiful. Yes. So you can see when there's imperfections in the set or something.
It's a black curtained room. There's nothing in it. There's like maybe one fern over here and then the coffin at the center of the room and that's it.
Yeah. And then when she pulls them into the coffin and she has, you know, some pretty, the makeup is very zombie-esque, but it's not really well done.
Yeah.
But she pulls them into the coffin and she's kind of smiling as she's going in. And I don't think she's smiling because she was directed to do that. I think she's smiling because she might feel silly as an actress or the situation.
Yeah.
And then like the coffin kind of like falls apart on the bottom. That's, you know, that whole scene doesn't feel like anything else in the movie to me.
No, not at all. But I love that it's there.
I love it too. I especially love it because El Jefe, the Chris Sarandon guy, is just kind of like, he doesn't have a watch, but he's just sitting there kind of smiling, like waiting for the zombie wife to take the husband who's yelling at him saying, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
It's very humorous. That whole scene just, made me laugh.
It's so good. Other body count, you've got the doctor's wife. So the doctor being the insemination doctor, the one who gave all the women the Satan spunk. Mm-hmm. she came to the house to check on Helen and saw what a bad condition she was in and was going to try to go back to town to get the doctor. But Sister Margaret stopped her. And this is another sort of a Giallo-esque type kill where she's getting strangled and it's like, oh, wait, I'm not going to kill you this way. Instead, I'm going to like stick your head next to the exhaust pipe.
Right.
And have you die that way.
Yeah. That choking, that scene went on a little too long for my taste. Cause that one was like over a minute of her just of you know, the victim just like gagging and choking for air. And Margaret just close up on her face, looking angry. It's very, again, very soap opera-y.
Yeah. Not my favorite kill, but whenever they're focused on Margaret's face, I was like, yay.
Yeah. She's great.
Then you have the actual doctor himself in the parking garage. He gets hit with a car and then he gets stabbed.
Yeah, the whole setup's really odd too, because he's walking out to the parking lot and then all the headlights in the car just start flashing.
Yeah.
And it freaks him out. Again, it's kind of supernatural. And then the Chris Sarandon guy's like yelling, you know, you can't escape. and then you focus on him spitting out blood for a good like 30 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
That stabbing, though, was good because it's like close up on a dummy.
Yeah.
And the knife's like going in and out and blood's pouring out. That looked like,
you know, what was a really good effect, too, was when Frederick got his eyes gouged out.
Yes.
It was so good. Like it shows it going in and then his hands going up to the face. Like it looked great.
Yeah. The effects are good. And you can never go wrong. Like, I just love that bright blood. That's 70s,
Give me
early
that
80s.
Give me the paint blood. And then I guess the last death in the film, which I guess I have more questions about this one too, is Elizabeth.
Oh, well, that's not technically.
Right.
Okay.
Of these people. Well, I don't want to. Yeah, we'll get to the ending. So Elizabeth, you know, she, after she comes back to the house and she gets chased around, like Lance said, Scooby-Doo style, and she ends up back in the attic. And then the next time Margaret finds her in the attic, she is naked, covered in newspaper clippings, and hanged.
Yeah, completely purple with her tongue sticking out.
Right. But then she like sort of wakes up and puts her arm on her. And then she's also speaking from beyond the grave.
Yeah. She says, Margaret, I'll be in hell soon and I will get my revenge. So to me, because, you know, Frederick keeps calling like Margaret while she's staying there the whole time, like, you're a witch, and people call her a witch. And
yeah,
that's what she is. Like, she's a witch. But to me, Elizabeth is like the true witch here. She's like speaking from the beyond and, you know, saying like, I'm going to get my revenge, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know that whole supernatural, again, it's another supernatural twist to everything that's going on here. But yeah, because she's dead, but then she grabs Margaret and Margaret's kind of frozen in fear, like she can't move. Really weird.
Again, I think a prequel would definitely help.
Yeah, I mean, we need a prequel and we need a sequel too, because obviously she's in hell causing havoc.
That's true. Yeah. But we would have, I mean, all these characters are so much fun that like you could, there's so much you could do with it. But I mean, we kind of talked about how a lot of the gore in here was really good. I think there's some stuff that is more H.G. Lewis, kind of like you mentioned, like when Helen is further on in her pregnancy and she's starting to get sores on her face and her chest. They're drawn on by magic marker.
Yeah, it's very endearing.
I love it though.
I think that's why they made Frederick blind, so he wouldn't be seeing her go through this weird transformation.
Yeah.
Or else if he had sight, he would just wash her face and she'd be fine because it's just marker.
It is. And I do love it for that. Like I saw that and I was like, that's adorable. And thank you.
Well, another thing that I know you loved is that scene where Frederick goes up, or is up in the attic, I think.
Mm-hmm. He's in the attic.
And you get just a huge swarm of the most fake rubbery bats you can imagine.
I love them so much.
As soon as it started, you see the strings, you see everything. I'm like, okay, he just walked into some weird like child's mobile. This is a toy. This isn't really a bat attack, is it? Is that what I'm watching?
It is.
They're real bats. I couldn't believe it.
So good. I love fake bats. You throw a fake bat in any movie, it's automatically getting an extra half star.
I just watched another Mexican horror movie like earlier in the week called The Curse of Nostradamus. Mm-hmm. And there's a great fake back in there. So okay. Basically it's Herman Robles.
Yeah.
And he plays a vampire Nostradamus.
Oh, did Abraham? I think Abraham mentioned
this. I think he did. Yeah. There's like four in a series of movies. Okay. This one's from 1960. But yeah, as soon as that popped up, because I had just watched The Curse of Nostradamus like before this, mm-hmm. I was like, oh my God, this Eric is like in heaven. I got to tell Erica first about Nostradamus, but
yeah.
These fake bats take it to another level because he escapes. There's all these weird kind of passageways in the house too.
Yeah. It's like you go up into the attic, but then you open a mirrored closet and behind there's a bolted door. And that's where Elizabeth was being held for however long.
Yeah. So he takes like this side panel, this hidden panel out of the attic. And as he closes the door, little cute bat gets his head squished all. Whee!
The little fake bat.
Aww. Yeah. And it's too cute to like be sad. It's so because you know it's just like a doll.
I know, but I love it even more when you can see the strings. Like,
yeah.
I love seeing, you know, the zipper in the suit. I don't care. Like, I think it's great.
Like, at least put, like, fake cobwebs around or something to hide some of this. I mean, I don't know. Again, you're right. It's just so endearing. Just leave it.
Yeah.
Leave those strings.
It's so good. So we already went through all of the kills and everything. There is also a kill tease in this.
There is. Yeah. I thought would have been, like, why you picked it. Like, when this popped up, I was like, okay, here we go. This is why Erica picked this.
So Peter, he is Frederick's nephew, and he gets picked up at the station by Margaret. She's there. He's there with his mom. They were going to go visit. He ends up going with Margaret to go back to the house, and she makes him get out of the car and says, go pick up that rock for whatever fucking reason. And he's like, what? Okay, fine. And then she tries to run him over, and he gets out of the way. First time I watched it, I was like, God damn it. But
yeah.
I'm going to surprise everyone right now. I don't hate this kid.
Oh, okay.
He's not terrible. He's got, I don't want to say spunk because we keep talking about sperm, but like he's got, like he's that kind of kid. Like, you know, he's got a little bit of an attitude. Like with Margaret, he's like, I don't want to go with you. Fuck you. I don't like you. And it's like,
I do like him. Yeah. He plays terrified really well. I thought he acted really well.
Yeah. So I didn't hate the kid. So I wasn't mad that he didn't get killed. I would have liked for him to have get killed so I can include him with the child kill project and list and everything. But
yeah,
it's fine. I'm not mad that the child didn't get killed. Any other movie, I would have been like, why the fuck didn't you kill that kid? But
yeah, you're right. It is a huge tease because like the way it's presented is like Margaret, just who we already know is evil. She asks the mom like, oh, I'll take him.
Yeah.
And then I thought, okay, here we fucking go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you think there's another point at the end of the movie when Margaret catches him back at the house and she's choking him. And I'm thinking like, oh, okay, he is going to get killed now. But then no. Frederick finally does something in the movie and stabs Margaret and kills her to save Peter. So
yeah,
again, not mad about it though.
Yeah. We have one thing that I don't know if you noticed. So whenever the Chris Sarandon guy, El Jefe, is on screen, he always has that red light shining on.
Yes.
Him. Not always, but in a lot of scenes, it's just
most of it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's completely, sometimes he's sharing a scene with somebody and there's just a red light on him.
Like, out of nowhere.
But the wind seems to play a huge role in this.
It's so loud.
It is. The sound effect of the wind sound effects is just all over the place in this. The most prominent scene though is when he goes to look for the one wife or the one woman who was artificially inseminated and the husband killed her.
Right.
Her name was Mrs. Bruner.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess there's a crying girl who's walking out of the funeral home or wherever it is.
Yeah.
And he gets out of his car.
Broad daylight.
And it all of a sudden is like the windiest like environment you've ever seen. Like he's got a wind machine on him and a red light on him. And he's like, where's Mrs. Bruner? And you immediately cut to the little girl and it's just calm and she's crying. Mm. Oh, she's dead. And back to him. Whoosh, I'm like, I love it, but I don't know. It seemed like it should be involved with like all environment around him.
Yeah, no, he's got a wind like shield, like he's in a wind bubble.
Yeah, he's like it's like a Satan's force field or something that only, I don't know.
Yeah. So I first saw this movie 2 years ago. The John put this on for his birthday marathon back in 2020. And this was great with the crowd, especially the ending. So I want you to talk through the ending, and I want to hear about your experience watching that ending.
So the ending is Helen gives birth, and the baby's wrapped in this black shawl. And, Margaret and El Jefe are performing the pregnancy, the birth. And Margaret runs off, and that's where she's killed. But El Jefe runs out with the baby.
And they, like, during...
Oh, during, yeah, during the
there's
birth...
There's been, like...
There's forest fires happening.
Yeah, which, there's stock footage, forest fires, like, intercut with her giving birth.
And the walls in the room are starting to bleed. I mean, it's a really great scene. I especially love the stock footage fires. Oh, yeah. I was like, this is great. It's the fucking Armageddon. You know, the Antichrist is being born. And El Jefe grabs the baby and walks outside. And Helen gets up and she has no more sores. She's just completely naked, looking great.
She's stoked on life.
She's on ecstasy.
She's like watching El Jefe walk off with the baby, and she's just smiling like, there he goes.
Well, what's even funnier is El Jefe's face. He's got this smile on his face. Like, like you just wouldn't believe, like the most joyful smile ever. And he's walking through what looks like burned, you know, trees.
Yeah.
And he comes across... I guess it's burned limbs making the sign of the cross. Mm-hmm. And this is literally like less than a minute. It is so rushed. And as he looks up and sees the cross, the baby starts smoking, and he throws the baby and it is engulfed in flames. And the baby, God bless this baby. It is clearly a plastic doll that is, you could buy at the dollar store. With horns on it, but it is just burning, and then the end. I mean, this all takes place like in a minute. The first time I watched this, I was like, "What are you? Are you kidding me?" I mean, at first I thought like lame. You know, I wanted more of all what was happening. But as it ended, I was like, "I love this so much." What a perfect way to just end this fucking movie.
Yeah, I love that doll. Like it's. It's honestly like one of the best I've ever seen. Like this one,
like a baby that's clearly a doll.
Yeah, like
there's that Sniper movie with Bradley Cooper. Is that what it's called, Sniper?
Yeah, seen it.
I haven't seen it either, but I've seen like the pictures of it. Where he picks up a baby and he's like, you know, he's acting. He's doing a good job acting like this is a baby, but it's very clearly a doll. That he's hugging on.
There's a British public information film called Grain Drain, but that's not like, it's a public information film. It's not the same thing. One of the books or one of the movies that's in the Bleeding Skull book, Necrophiles. I think Zach hated that movie, but that one's got a fake baby doll in it. These are shot on video, so you expect baby dolls in them too. Zombie 90 Extreme Pestilence had a really good one.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, the only thing I could think is, you know, the props department bought the doll wherever they bought the bats.
Yeah, and then they glued little horns on it and one little tooth.
Oh, yeah, there is a tooth. I think you could, I mean, this is a spoiler. I think you can see it better in the image.
Yeah.
Of the poster that's on.
It's right there on Letterboxd. It's fucking adorable. It's a burnt tooth crisp baby doll with little horns on its head. I love it.
It is great. But yeah, when it ended, like the ending is so fast. My favorite part is when the guy is just smiling, kind of skipping through all, looks up and sees it, engulfed in flames, boom. Great way to end this movie.
Yes, absolutely.
Great pick, Erica.
Thank you.
I'm glad I finally watched it. Been sitting on my shelf a little too long.
So obviously we both recommend this film. What direction did you go with double feature pick?
Okay, so I did keep thinking of Prince of Darkness, which I paired with Damned in Venice.
I thought of it too. I was like, but no, Lance just did that.
Right. And then your double feature for Damned in Venice was Bloody Sex. So it all kind of intertwines. And then I thought of one of your favorites, The House of the Devil.
That's not funny.
We all love Ty West on this podcast.
No, nobody likes Ty West on this podcast.
I knew this would cause controversy. So I went with Beyond the Door.
Oh, okay, yeah.
AKA also known as Who Are You? From 1974, directed by Ovidio Assonides and Robert Piazzoli. And Ovidio holds a special place in my heart. He brought us, me and Erica and I, together when you invited me and Cody on your podcast covering his Madhouse. But Beyond the Door is basically an Italian ripoff of The Exorcist and Rosemary's Baby, about a mother who becomes pregnant with her third child, and the pregnancy progresses at this rapid rate. And while she's pregnant with what seems to be the child of the Antichrist, she also becomes possessed. So it's double the fun and a very unfortunate situation for this woman. Like Helen in Bloody Sect, this woman in Beyond the Door, her name's Jessica, she's going through this gross transformation during her pregnancy as she's carrying this demon baby inside her. I mean, the plot doesn't really make any sense.
It's
in Italian. Yeah. And that's okay because visually, Beyond the Door is just like this gross, trashy party that's just fun as hell to watch. It has like the usual demonic possession tropes with the vomit, the deep demon voices. But it's really fun. It's supposedly the first in one of those strange Italian trilogy collections, you know, where they where sequels are weirdly assigned or linked to other Italian films that are completely unrelated.
Yeah.
So it's Beyond the Door, then Mario Bava's Shock.
Right.
With Daria Nicolodi, and then Beyond the Door 3. Beyond the Door is actually my favorite of those three.
Yeah.
It's just because it's just how wild it is. So I would pair Bloody Sect up with Beyond the Door. I'd kick it off with, man, that ending though. But Beyond the Door has a great ending too.
Yeah, that's tough. That's a tough. You can't lose.
You can't. However, either way, it's up to you. It has an Arrow release, and it's also streaming an Arrow player. So Beyond the Door.
Love it.
What's your pick?
I had a lot that I was thinking of, like a few that came to mind as far, like just how much I was thinking about Satan's sperm while I was watching this film. The movie, The Incubus from 1982 came up,
John
came
Cassavetes,
to mind. Yeah. Cause they talk so much about like how much fucking sperm.
That's right.
And that's so I don't think it would necessarily work as a double feature, but like, I mean, unless you were going for like a, you know,
a splugel feature. Splugel feature. Come on, guys. Give me that one.
I'll give it to you. Demon Seed from 1977, where Julie Christie gets impregnated by a computer. That's Devil Fetus, but technically you don't really see the Devil Fetus from, I think it's like a few seconds, and it's a great Hong Kong movie, but I don't think it's fitting too much with this. But and then like The Devil Within Her, which is Joan Collins, Donald Pleasance, and Carolyn Monroe's in there too. But that one isn't necessarily like the Antichrist baby. That one's like her getting, she actually has the baby fairly early in the film and thinks it's possessed by the spirit of this like evil little person that she wronged in the past.
A little person?
Yeah.
Cool.
It's interesting.
Okay.
But ultimately I ended up going with one that I actually brought up in Junesploitation a few years ago. It's The Unborn from 1991. With Brooke Adams and James Caan in it. And it's about a couple who can't have children, so they join a fertilization program. And then really strange things start to happen to her body while she's pregnant. And they eventually discover that the doctor had other plans for their fetus and they were part of this really weird experiment. So this one has an equally interesting ending. It doesn't exactly go the route that you expect that it's going to. It's not nearly the what the fuck ending that Bloody Sect is, but I do like this movie. I would go this one first and then end with Bloody Sect, because Bloody Sect has a superior like what the fuck ending.
Yeah,
in this one,
it's a great way to end the day. Just yeah. Or anything. I mean, end your life. I mean, I just it's die good. Happy.
There you go. Exactly. So that's my April Showers of Blood pick. Lance, what do you got?
Okay, I'm pulling out, I think, one of the coolest titles that includes the word blood.
Mm.
Blood Orgy of the She-Devils.
This is is it shot on video?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely DIY. Yeah.
Okay.
It's
it sounds like some, I feel like Bleeding Skulls covered
Yeah, it's Mitch. It's written and directed by Ted V. Michaels.
Ah, so okay.
Yeah, 1973. Ted V. Michaels directed The Corpse Grinders, Astro Zombies, Doll mm-hmm. Squad. So it definitely has that DIY shot on video, nonconformist, like whole presentation. But Blood Orgy of the She-Devils is about Mara, the queen of the Black Witches, who, with the aid of black magic, reincarnation, and a gang of maiden disciples or she-devils, sacrifices captive men and seeks revenge against those who have tortured and persecuted witches throughout the centuries in past lives. So we just brought up Ted V. Michaels. I think similar to how we approached Creatures from the Abyss, I think this might be a film where we talk a lot about the director.
Yeah.
Because he has a lot of off-kilter films, like, and the way he approached making his movies. Anyone familiar with Michaels might be a little put off by this pick, because there are pacing issues in Blood Orgy of the She-Devils, just like there are in most of his films. But like, there's this undeniable just passion in his presentation and the script and the cast. I mean, everybody goes for it. So I think it's going to be fun to dive into. Blood Orgy of the She-Devils has 557 views on Letterboxd. It's currently on Tubi. It does have a DVD release out there that you can find for super cheap, like under 10 bucks, from Image Entertainment's Cult Cinema Collection. Are you ready for it?
Yeah. I am. No, I am. It's been a very long time since I've watched one of his films, so I'm willing to see it with older and wiser eyes. And
oof. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, there's.
So I watched The Corpse Grinders a long time ago, but I'm actually having watched Blood Orgy of the She-Devils fairly recently for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I was going through a lot of blood titles. None of them were really just all good, you know. Yeah. All movies are good. This one just really sucked me in for some reason. I fell in love with it, and I'm really interested. Like you just said, I want to dive into his other shit and see what's.
I mean, I'll
see if we get some Alvaro Passati weirdness going on.
I'm not
going
to promise how many Ted V. Michaels movies I'm going to watch. I'll give at least two or three.
Come on, let's do the 100% like we did.
Oh, fuck no. I know how many movies this man has made. Hell no.
Yeah, should be fun.
Well, April Showers of Blood continues in 2 weeks. If you are not already, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and Slasher, all at Unsung Horrors. And you can follow me on Letterboxd, Twitter, and Instagram at Hex Massacre.
I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd at El Shivey.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll see you back for
Blood Orgy of the She-Devils.
Night, y'all.
Bye. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Death by Video.
I'm Phil.
I'm Kit.
And I'm Graham, saying welcome to our podcast full of merry movie mayhem.
Ever wonder what an Irish kung fu movie would look like?
It's called Fatal Deviation, and we covered it.
Ever wonder what a movie about 1,000 cats would look like?
It's called Night of 1,000 Cats, and we covered it.
And it stars Hugo Stiglitz. Listen to Death by Video to hear us discuss and dissect some of the weirdest, wildest, and wackiest films ever made. All this and more on Death by Video! Woo!